Welcome back. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. We're joined with my special guest, Dr. Dudley Danoff. Good morning, Dr. Danoff.
Good morning, Christy.
Thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure.
I don't know if you remember, but we chatted, I think, last year.
Yes, I remember very well.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun, so thanks for being back on. If I believe correctly, maybe it was in September. September is National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, so we're coming up on that. And you've been busy this past year. Talk to us about what you've been doing. Give us a little background in case people missed that show, what you do and what your specialty is.
Well, I'm a urologic surgeon. I practice at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, which is a 1,000-bed community teaching hospital in Los Angeles, the western part of Los Angeles. And I've been in practice for more than 30 years. I spend most of my day treating prostate cancer. A couple of years ago, I got interested in male sexual health and wrote a tongue-in-cheek, kind of funny, factual book that became very popular. And I just came out this week, the second edition of The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, How to Stay Vital at Any Age. It's filled with everything a man and a woman wants to know about that special part of a man. And it's medically accurate. It's easy to read. It's tongue-in-cheek. Most people love it. So I've been promoting the book and working on practice and trying to perfect my short game in golf.
Well, congratulations on the new book. I got a copy of it a few weeks ago. And I think I mentioned this before. The first book I took to the hair salon with me. And I've never really thought of myself as liking drama or anything like that per se, but I found myself sort of doing the same thing with this, with the second book. I would put it in my bag at work and I would purposely put the binding up so that if people walk by and they happen to look, it would make them think or possibly bring their awareness to it, or just talking about things that, as you said, every woman and man want to know, but a lot of people aren't talking about.
Yeah, look, part of my role, Christy, as a mainstream, I'm Princeton educated. I went to Yale Medical School. I trained at Columbia Presbyterian. So I'm a mainstream urologic surgeon. And, every time we mention the word penis, people giggle. And I always have to remind them that it is not a pejorative word. It's a body part. It is to the urologist what the elbow is to the orthopedist. And I have to say, get over it. And I know that your audience tends to be very conservative, but, there's nothing dirty or pejorative about the word, but it certainly makes everybody giggle. So, part of my job has been to sort of educate the public, especially the men. You have to go and get your prostate exam. I mean, a woman wouldn't miss her annual pap smear and breast examination, and the same is true of men. And this year alone, there will be 240,000 new cases of prostate cancer alone in America, and about 25,000 men will die of it. And it can be prevented with early diagnosis and very, very good treatment. So, fellas, we got to get you to wake up, get you to stop being so macho, take care of yourself. We need you.
Because you work so closely with these patients, Dr. Danoff, how does that, being diagnosed with prostate cancer, how does that affect intimacy and a man and really a couple? I mean, it affects the couple for sure. But how does that play a part in intimacy after they're diagnosed? And I know that's something that you work with a lot in trying to help get that back. So talk to us a little bit about what you've seen working with your patients and the transition into moving to this next phase of their life after diagnosis.
Well, the majority of people diagnosed with prostate cancer will either not be treated, or they will be treated in such a way that intimacy and continence will not be problematic. I mean, there are some advanced cases in which we have to have very aggressive treatment, which affects testosterone, because testosterone is a fertilizer. I mean, testosterone to prostate cancer is what cow manure is to growing wheat. It's a fertilizer. So one of the treatments in advanced prostate cancer is to try to ablate or get rid of testosterone. And that certainly will affect libido. If a patient has advanced prostate cancer and requires surgery, we do the surgery with a robot. It's a very precise surgery. It preserves both continence and potency. We call it nerve sparing. And the majority of men with early prostate cancer don't need treatment at all, because focal prostate cancer is very, very common, and we watch it, we carefully monitor it, and it doesn't need any treatment. But, you know, we don't want to close the barn door after the horse runs out. So if that early prostate cancer is an aggressive type, you know, then we have to act. But most patients who have prostate cancer have perfectly normal sex lives and do not give up any of that intimate relationship that they have with their partner.
Dr. Danoff, one of the things I love about your book, and if people, of course, the second edition just came out, but if people didn't see your first book, there are, I don't know if you call them cartoon, but there's characters.
Yeah, well, it's satirical. So, I mean, there are some, as I say, it's very lighthearted. And I think the objective, and I hope, you know, that if your listeners read the book, they're not offended. Most people aren't. They do take it for the humor that I intended. So I have a section called Penis Personalities. And the idea was that a man is the same in the bedroom as he is in the boardroom. And there are positive personalities, and there are negative ones, and all pompous penis personality, persnickety, and we use the P word. So we have negative and positive, and we have a little cartoon figure. If he's pompous, you know, he looks like, you know, Caesar conquering Rome. And if he's, you know, persnickety, we have somebody that looks sad and nerdy. So it's kind of tongue-in-cheek and funny. And most readers love it and laugh about it. And some at parties will take out the book and try to compare their friends. Oh, isn't Tom a jerky penis personality? And isn't Bill preposterous? And so it's a lot of fun.
One of the things, the other things that I've enjoyed about the book. You talk about intimacy, and that sometimes it can be a physiological issue, but that oftentimes the problem is psychological. Talk to us about what different psychological components could possibly be affecting intimacy.
Yeah, well, in younger people, in the younger age group, say 40 to 60, I say that 99% of the problem is between the ears and not between the legs. So psychological factors, I mean, there's a direct pipeline from the brain to a man's genital organs. And self-doubt is the killer. If you doubt, you know, your ability to get an erection firm enough for penetration, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like the dog chasing his tail around in ever-decreasing circles until he disappears up his you-know-what. So self-doubt is a terrible thing. You can't be angry. You can't be tense. You can't be sad. You can't be negative. All of those things impact on your ability to have satisfactory sex. And the second thing is, very often, the inability to get an erection, that is ED, as we see, is a red flag that there is some underlying medical illness, such as unrecognized diabetes or hypertension or hypercholesterolemia or a thyroid problem. So if a patient comes to me with a complaint of ED, you know, I don't just give them the magic blue pill or give them an injection of a vasoactive substance. I explore that patient for some underlying medical problem. A lot of it is psychological, and very often we have to rule out an underlying medical problem, and then say, yeah, look, all the equipment is in place. You've got good vessels, you've got good nerve supply, and now we've got to deal with what's going on in your head.
I did not realize until I was doing a little research after I got your book about the prevalence, and you had given us some numbers about prostate cancer, and then I had read something that it's the second most common cancer in the U.S. for men. Are you seeing more and more men diagnosed with prostate cancer? You've mentioned, what, 25 or 30 years you've been in this field?
Yes. And the answer is yes. And the reason for that is there's a routine blood test, which is called PSA. It stands for prostate-specific antigen. And so it's a very, very simple blood test. And if your PSA is elevated, it alerts the urologist that there is a possibility of prostate cancer. Now, elevated PSA can be caused by any number of things that are not cancer, such as inflammation or bowel movement or sexual activity or a long bicycle ride or an infection. But unfortunately, one of the things that elevates a PSA is prostate cancer. So most men are having this test after they reach the age of 40, and that's alerting the urologist that there may be a problem. So we are able to make the diagnosis much earlier, and it allows us to treat the patient in a way that will preserve both potency and continence.
Dr. Danoff, is there anything, I'm sure probably, you know, diet and exercise, things, basic things like that, that probably reduce your risk of cancer for all sorts of different cancers, but is there anything specific that men can do to decrease their risk of prostate cancer?
I mean, there certainly are. It seems that there is a genetic basis to prostate cancer, so obviously we can't do much about that. So if you have a male relative, uncle, father, brother, who has prostate cancer, you are 30% more likely to have prostate cancer, so you have to be on a high alert. If you are an African American, statistically, you are at greater risk than a Caucasian. Thirdly, smoking, obesity, all appear to have some relationship to prostate cancer. So I think the objective is to be a lean, mean fighting machine. Physical fitness, a low cholesterol diet, exercise program. I mean, you have to be fit to have sex. Sex takes upper body strength. It takes lower body strength. You feel better about yourself when you look in the mirror and you don't see, you know, a big paunch hanging over your belt, the so-called Dunlap syndrome, my belly Dunlap over my belt. So physical fitness, low cholesterol, I think are very helpful in reducing the incidence of prostate cancer.
Dr. Danoff, you talked about some of the treatments for prostate cancer and kind of how they've changed. When you first got into the field, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen towards the treatment and how prostate cancer is looked at now than it was when you first started?
Well, when I first started, there was no PSA examination, and almost all prostate cancers were picked up by either a digital rectal exam in which a prostate is examined and felt to be hard or irregular, or a patient presented with metastatic disease to his bones. 80% of the prostate cancers that I diagnosed prior to PSA were already incurable, that is to say, outside of the confines of the prostate or spread to the bones. Now with PSA, we're able to pick up the prostate cancer at a very, very early age, get a handle on it, be able to treat it either focally without interrupting the ability to get an erection and intimacy, or using this unbelievable magical tool called the Da Vinci robot, which is a very precise way of removing the prostate without interfering in the nerves of potency. And now we have certain areas of what we call focal treatment. We have HIFU, high intensity focused ultrasonic treatment, in which we can beam, an ultrasonic wave, very precisely at that area of the prostate that's involved with cancer and treat it selectively. So the progress has been dramatic is a very conservative way of describing it. It's been explosively positive.
Dr. Danoff, we need to take a quick commercial break. Can you stay with us for a few minutes?
Christine, for you, of course.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. Welcome back. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG. We're joined with my special guest, Dr. Dudley Danoff. Thanks for staying with us, Dr. Danoff.
Pleasure.
We're talking about the second edition of your book, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, How to Stay Vital at Any Age. And during the commercial break, of course, you know Ricky, you met him last September, and you basically said, Ricky, it's really important that you take care of yourself and that you get prostate exams and things like that. Remember, Ricky?
Yes, I do.
Yes, right. And Dr. Dan. Okay. So Ricky had a question, and he said, Christy, go ahead and ask him this question. And I said, oh, no, you're the man.
So, Dr. Danoff, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Ricky.
Okay, so my question is, as I understand it, and this is just coming from somebody that doesn't know anything, let's put it that way, there's more diagnosis of prostate cancer now because we're able to pick up on it so early. And the possibility of having prostate cancer and it never affecting you, is that true that some people could have prostate cancer, never know about it, and they die of natural causes? And
oh, absolutely, yes. So the fact that we're able to make the diagnosis more frequently doesn't necessarily that we're treating more aggressively. As a matter of fact, over the last 10 or 15 years, we're treating prostate cancer much less aggressively because we're able to understand the biophysiology of the behavior of prostate cancer. So I'll give you an example, Ricky. If I came down to Bristol, Virginia, and I randomly biopsied the first 100-year-old men I would meet on the street, that's the hypothetical, about 95% of them would have a focal prostate cancer, which would not require treatment. It's almost a natural process of aging, and virtually all of them will die with a prostate cancer and not of it. And one of the objectives of treatment, say in a 60 or a 70-year-old, is if we can keep that prostate cancer within our sights and watch it not progress, that patient will die of something other than prostate cancer. So the motto amongst urologists who treat prostate cancer is we want our patients to die with prostate cancer, not of prostate cancer. You know, since everybody's going to die of something, I mean, and I have a one-year-old granddaughter, I mean, I love her to death, but, you know, she's going to die of something, so we hope it won't be prostate cancer. So early diagnosis, careful surveillance, selective treatment, but it's been a revolution. It's changed completely.
It's changed completely, As far as risks involved with treatment, to say somebody has it and they have to be treated, do they still pose risks that that could make it worse than if you hadn't treated it at all?
Well, I don't know. I mean, in medicine, we have this adage, you know, do no harm. So any treating physician, if he feels he's going to do harm, shouldn't be treating the patient. So we're very selective in the way we treat the patient. And my objective, and I think most urologic oncologists would agree with me, is we try not to do any harm. I mean, the worst thing we can do is make a patient worse by his treatment than he is with his disease. So we're very selective in the way we treat the patients. There are some treatments that do have some inherent risk to them. I mean, any surgical procedure has an inherent risk. I think the risk in the way we treat prostate cancer with the robot is very, 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 very small. And if you put it on the scale, what we call the risk to benefit ratio, the benefit, you know, way, way, way outweighs the risk. And anything we do, and you take an aspirin, I mean, there's a risk-to-benefit ratio. You know, it might cure your headache, but the risk is you could get some bleeding or a gastric ulcer. So everything we do in medicine, we have to put on that scale, almost like the scale of justice, risk-to-benefit ratio.
Okay.
Dr. Danoff, when you think about that early diagnosis and blood work, some of the possible treatments, and of course, as Ricky said, we are not medical doctors. That's why we have you here with us this morning. But would some of the treatments possibly that early on treatment be dealing with hormones and things like that, medications?
Well, hormonal manipulation is usually reserved for a more advanced prostate cancer. So early treatment might be a medication other than hormone manipulation. Some people with early prostate cancer require no treatment at all, just meticulous observation, what we call active surveillance with the periodic biopsies and imaging studies. And a large number of early prostate cancers don't go at all. Going back to that 100-year-old man example I gave you, many people are walking around with focal prostate cancer that will never advance. The problem is there are a small number of those tumors which are aggressive and, if untreated, will result in death or serious medical problems such as pathologic fractures of bones of the leg or the hip.
Dr. Danoff, your book, the second edition, just came out this week. Where can people find the book? And because this is brand new, most people haven't seen it other than those lucky fortunate ones like me.
Yeah, well, well, all the usual places. I mean, Amazon has it. You can pre-order it. Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, all the booksellers, all the usual outlets. It's available as an e-book. So anywhere you buy a book. The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, How to Stay Vital in Any Age is there.
And it really covers, it's completely inclusive. It covers really everything that a man or woman would want to know about men's health and how this is affecting every different area in their life. It really covers everything. And I encourage women to read the book as well.
Yeah, I have a whole chapter specifically for women. I want every woman to be a penis professor, know everything about that part of a man's life that she's involved in, where it works, when it works, how it works, why it works. So I try. This is not, by the way, this is not a how-to book. I mean, this is a book which is a straight down the middle medical book written in terms that lay people can understand. It'll definitely bring a chuckle to your face, a lot of useful information. So it's definitely a user-friendly book. But, yeah, women are involved here.
Well, it's definitely medical in lay terms. Even Ricky and I can understand it.
No, he
hasn't Ricky seen it yet.
Be careful, Christy. I think Ricky's smarter than he's letting on here.
I know.
I'm a dumb old Virginia guy. I think that's a false front.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he plays a lot of different cards. We just let him believe whatever he thinks he needs
to. There you go. Like a smart woman would every time.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show and all of your knowledge and information. And we really appreciate you getting this information and topic out here so that people can start discussing it because it's
absolutely
really important.
Absolutely. And your listeners can go to my website, The Ultimate Guide to Male Health. Just leave out sexual. The Ultimate Guide to Male Sex. The Ultimate Guide to Male Health. There's a lot of good stuff there, and it's a pleasure to talk with you, Christy, and send my regards to all my friends in Bristol.
Okay, sounds great. Next time you come to the East Coast, let us know. We'll have you in the studio.
Yeah, thanks, Christy.
Thank you. Okay, Ricky, thanks for participating in the conversation with me.
Well, you're welcome, Christy.
Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be back here in just a few minutes. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday Mornings, WFHG 92.9.